And I just think that the only thing that made anybody's life easy was a dishwasher and a washing machine, and that's it, really. And a microwave, that's it.
Power to Live More with Joe Dodds.
Welcome to the Power to Live More podcast, all about productivity, organisation, well-being, energy and resilience. I'm Joe Dodds, and I started this show back in 2016 to enable interesting people to share their stories about how they use their power to live more. And by that, I mean how they focus on productivity, organisation, well-being, energy and resilience to enable them to do more of the stuff that they want to do and less of the stuff that they don't. After 241 shows, I've taken a pause from doing new interviews to reshare previous interviews. They were too good to not revisit. So please do bear in mind that this podcast might refer to events from the past as current or in the future. But rest assured that the stories, tips and advice shared by my guests continues to be pure gold.
Hello, my name is Ellie Dodds and I'm co-presenter. And today Joe's interviewing Angela Durant, a singing and voice coach. Joe's introduced to Angela by the ever helpful Paula Gardner. Jo says she had lunch with Paula this week, and she says she has more guests lined up for us. It then transpired that they have a mutual connection via a guest from the Engage for Success podcast that Jo also hosts, and through Nicola Canecross from Show 11, A Small World, as they say. Angela is a high-performance coach and mentor for singers and speakers seeking to expand to their full potential and expression. She has worked with hundreds of singers and speakers, managers, senior civil servants and solopreneurs to find their voice, master their message and be inspiring on whatever stage they find themselves on. Angela trained as a sound engineer and followed that by studying at the Welsh College of Music in order to embark on a professional music career. After suffering a near-fatal car crash 9 years ago, Angela stepped back from vocal and personal burnout and began to study voice science and teaching. She's run a private practice for over 8 years and now helps others tap into their artist within, press their Find Me button and release their creativity through their music, public speaking and magnetic audience engagement. Angela has recently created the Online Singing Academy and the free Facebook group The Online Singing School, and plans are afoot for the A-Star Speaking Academy. Connect with her on Facebook to find out more. Back to the studio!
Today I'm interviewing Angela Durant of Making Singing Easy. Thanks for joining me, Angela. This is our second attempt at recording it, and I don't know how long it took us to actually get the appointment in the diary, so I'm really pleased you're here.
Yes, it has been fun.
And we connected so well as well that we just keep chatting away and keep thinking, oh, we better get on and record this. So it's really good to be talking to you again and have caught up. So tell us a bit about who you are and what you do and where you do it.
Okay, well, my name is Angela Durant and I'm a vocal and performance coach. So because my company is called Making Singing Easy, don't let that fool you that it's all just about singing and you can turn off now. I work with speakers, singers, I'm a teacher and writing, and I'm a bit of a general all-round voice geek, really. So I also have particular interest in the psychology of our thinking around voice and how we show up with that and what we do. So I do it in Cardiff and around. I do a lot of internet, a lot of internet teaching. And I'm just about to put some singing retreats and speaking retreats on as well. So lots of exciting stuff coming up.
Lovely. So as a fellow speaker, always good to hear about, not speaking, fellow speaker as well, fellow singer, always good to hear about singing going on all around.
Yay.
So tell us why you do what you do. So I know you've got a bit of a story about why you're particularly doing this now, so it'd be really good to share that with our audience.
Cool. Well, I have a family background in music, so that's probably a pretty much a no-brainer as a sort of starting point. My uncle was famous ukulele player George Formby, and I grew up in the shadow of all of that sort of music hall fame, etc., and had a very love-hate relationship with music, although I had an innate sense of that it was something I wanted to do and be on the stage like my dad. I followed a sort of, you know, a general school background, and ended up sort of turning away from classical music because that's what I'd been taught, and sort of ended up in a recording studio in Cardiff at the age of 20 because I'd fallen in love with Bon Jovi. This is, you know, the kind of love, you're almost like, sometimes, isn't it, the thing that you love, you're almost, you want it and you're fighting against it all at the same time. So I spent 4 years in a recording studio working with people like Catatonia and sort of rock musicians.
We didn't discuss that last time. I love Catatonia.
Absolutely. Well, before they were famous, actually. So I have some stories in there, but that will be for another time. And I just knew that there was that love of being on the stage, and I really wanted to find out more about my own voice. And so I ended up auditioning and going into the Welsh Music, the Welsh College of Music and Drama. And I did 4 years there and sort of tried to, you know, push forward to have this career. And when I think back to it, I just wanted to know about my voice and about singing. And I had a sort of love of performing. But it's so easy how everybody else's opinion can kind of get involved in that initial love of what you do. And you start to think, well, I need to go this direction or I need to go that direction. And I pursued a sort of operatic classical career for a while. And what really sort of prompted me to come out of it was innate frustration with things that worked and didn't work. And when you did get auditions and didn't get auditions, and I just didn't want to be in my 50s hankering after a career that either would or wouldn't happen. So I met my husband and I knew I wanted a family. And I kind of had that moment of decision, went, well, I'm going to go for a family. And if I end up singing again, you know, I'm going to do it. So it was kind of, I kind of came out through frustration more than anything. But when you've got a desire and a love for something, it doesn't really die down. So I started to sing again. And I knew after having a car crash 9 years ago, when I nearly lost my life in the car crash, it was one of those life defining moments. And I just knew that I had to resign from everything that I was doing that I didn't want to do. I was selling houses. I was teaching part time. I was doing a lot of things. And I was a bit lost, really, in terms of where to go, because I wasn't sort of aiming for a performing career anymore. So I opened a voice coaching studio, and my gosh, that has been the biggest learning journey of all, because the people that were coming to me weren't of the discipline that I'd had. They were different people, and I must have had more of an innate sense of marketing, because I just thought, well, I can't just try and make them into bits of me that don't work. Let's go find out what actually does work for these people. Mm-hmm. So it set me on the path that where I am now, which is voice research, anatomy, physiology, the psychology of how we use our voices. And I've just had a privilege over the last sort of 10 years of working with hundreds of people, probably 700 or 800 people, including now speakers and even into some corporates, and just looking at how we show up, how our voice represents who we are, and all of the joys and the pains that go along with that. And it's just become almost my life's fascination.
It's amazing and lovely to hear that, isn't it? When you hear of people who have been through a journey and really feel like they've come out the other side with that connection to something that is just such a passion for them. So it's great to hear you know, describing that and, you know, quite dramatic to hear about it, you know, following the car accident. So having chosen to do all of that and to be doing something different sort of as a result of that, and having a family and so on, how do you prioritize what you do now? Because it sounds like you could go off in so many different directions and be all consumed by what you do. How do you work out what you will do and what you won't do and how it all fits together?
Cool, great question. And that's exactly what did happen, literally going off in every direction. And when you're starting off, you kind of think it's all about the money, so you go after the money, and then you realize you're trying to go after achievement, and that doesn't work either. And it's taken almost 10 years to work out that kind of less is more here. That, you know, the big doors tend to turn on little hinges. So for me, it's almost looking at what's really working. Sometimes, you know, I think it's good sometimes to almost put the feelers out and do a bunch of stuff and then let the stuff fall away that doesn't work. When I first started teaching, had I not just taught anything that virtually could had a living and breathing sense to it. If it had a tail, I'd have probably taught it to sing back in those days. But it's the fact that because I just did so much teaching, you know, it showed me who to work with, and it showed me what was going on with people. And that was, it's part of learning your craft. Sometimes you do have to kiss a few frogs to find the prince, I think. But as you start to sort of stay in the game longer, for me, it became about looking at the little changes that make the biggest difference. Mm. Certainly that's true in singing. You know, the more I started to understand how the voice worked, how I work the voice, it kind of had a parallel to life. And the more I was trying to turn the big stuff, the less effective it was. So it was about sort of, for me now, it's about putting the family first. We had a bit of a torrid journey in the last 5 years. My husband had 3 bouts of kidney cancer, and my mom was seriously ill at the same time. And I kind of went into that bunny mode of just not taking care of yourself and working really hard and supporting everybody, which I think is a real woman thing to do. Mm. And I realized that, you know, ignoring myself just to keep our head above water, it really wasn't, it wasn't the kind of, you know, lifestyle that any of us wanted long term. And sometimes there are needs must, you know, in that. But I started to look at what were the, instead of just trying to escape the situations that I didn't want to be in, it was more a case of, you know, this is where we find ourselves. We're dealing with all of this stuff at the same time. And what can we do, you know, to have a better quality of life in the middle of it? And it was about less, you know, when you're growing your business or you're doing these things, you always feel like you're in future thinking mode. You know, I'm going to be doing this and I'm going to be doing that. And it just became about, not about that. And you know, is there a small thing that's going to make our quality of life or even the relationships that I have with my clients or myself or my business, is that going to be better? So it feels like I'm reaching out less in order to actually gain more, which feels like a very odd, you know, an odd way of putting it. But it's probably due to the journey that we've been on as a family in the last 5 years that has shown me that, really, that you know, all of that busyness and trying to think that you're achieving so much, it's a little bit of an illusion because it's not really going on. When it all falls away, what's really true is actually there, and what isn't. Mm.
You are the queen of the sand bites. I'm loving the big
doors. I'm so sorry.
big doors move on little hinges. I've written that down. And the reaching out less to enable you to gain more, I think. And do you know, I was thinking, listening to you talking about all of that, about, you know, being ladies of a certain age, I suspect, with the catatonia references earlier. you know, I remember my dad used to quote the Mark Twain thing about his son thought he was a fool when he was 18. And by the time he was 20, he thought his father had learned a lot in 2 years. And you sort of think, you know, the sort of naivety of youth, believing that you know everything or certainly, you know a lot more than probably in the end you do. And actually you get to sort of, you know, I don't know if it's called middle age nowadays, but, you know, the sort of, you know, 30 years time type age, and you sort of have worked out through trials and tribulations exactly what you've said, which is that bit about it's about the journey. It's about being in the moment during that journey, regardless of everything else that's going around. Because as you said, and I love the bit you said about in business, you tend to think in future mode, that you know, that was one of the pivotal things for me. And again, mine was caused through, you know, death and an illness in the family that I actually stopped to think about it. And the one thing that I do that I didn't do is exactly that, about being in the moment, thinking about, you know, if stuff's happening, experiencing it and enjoying it because it's happening now, rather than constantly worrying about what's coming tomorrow or what I did yesterday or whatever. And if only we could teach our children and our young people that point that we only learn after 30 years of rubbish happening to us, it would make such a difference, wouldn't it?
Oh, I think they do. I think that it's just that we just get caught up in thinking that that's not the case. I mean, my daughter's a ballroom dancer, and we're about to to go off to Blackpool, and I'm about to probably book myself into the chiropractor on the way back from the B&Bs. But when she's dancing internationally, you know, against them, and she's only under 12s, and she's dancing for Wales, which sounds like a big deal. But when you realise the Russians are so much better, it's not. But it's great, you know. But she learns that in everything she does. It's just that, you know what? With my own mother, I never had the relationship with my own mother that I have with my daughter. And we did enough in her final sort of months of her life. But there's often a sense of parents that we're trying to sort of future-proof our children's lives so that they don't have to experience any of the heartache that we've experienced. Mm-hmm. And whilst there's whilst we don't want any harm to come to our children, there are things that life needs to teach them, and it's always different from what we've experienced. They're always building on what they see from us. I think the only thing that we can do is, if we can stand by them when we enter into their world, they have such a more innate ability to stick with their presence. They just haven't forgotten it as much as we have.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's funny, actually. We used to take little Dodsy, as she used to be called. I don't think I can call her that. She's 11 and almost as tall as me. We used to take her best friend on holiday with us when they were like 3 and 4, and we'd be away for a good couple of weeks. And her parents used to be like, you know, avidly contacting us to speak to Harry, and Harry was really not that bothered about talking to them, and it wasn't because she you know, doesn't love them, you know, and will, you know, that they, you know, didn't have a great relationship or anything else. It was just, I could see she was in the moment, and in the moment mummy and daddy weren't supposed to be here because they didn't go camping, therefore she didn't miss them because it wasn't their thing. And it did show me exactly what you've said, that our children are really good about being in the moment. It's as you get older that you start to lose that ability, because I guess, you know, the world happens and it comes back in the end, I think, which is what we're saying, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So we've got all a bit woo-woo and whatever, I don't know, there. So let's go pragmatic now, shall we?
Pragmatic.
So let's go pragmatic. How do you actually get this stuff done? Because apart from the fact that it sounded like you had a hectic life already, you've just thrown the ballroom dancing, trekking around the country thing in. So how do you get everything done?
Well, I mean, we have 3 hours of dancing a week on a Saturday. I've had to work my work around my life as much as anything. And when I look at my business, when I think about it practically, I used to get so caught up that I wasn't doing enough. But when I see how it grew quite organically around, you know, Ella at nursery school and then Ella changing, and I'm able to change it again now a little bit because, you know, as she goes to senior school. But I used to have master lists, right, because I was like everybody else. I would watch all the productivity things and I had this master list. Well, the master list was so overwhelming because I like to tick my lists off, you know, I'm one of those. I really like to feel a sense of accomplishment that I have ticked this list off. The problem with a master list is that I can never tick the list off. So, you know, there was a major amount of frustration with that. I went down to to-do lists, right? And to-do lists had this, and I know there's a kind of, you know, people put ta-da lists instead of to-do lists. Well, I even struggled with the to-do list because I'd put too much on that as well, because that was all future stuff for me, you know. Yeah. I've got to do this. I've started to keep a today list, and that's about it, really. I've kind of got a list on my notes on my iPhone with things that, you know, need to come in, like do remember the tickets to Blackpool, do send off that contract to your client, kind of thing. But I keep the today list because I've worked out now that I really do like a sense of accomplishment of ticking off the list. But if I add too much into it, I'm going to just overwhelm myself and hit brick walls. And there was a brilliant book, I don't know what the name of the guy is, but it was called Get It Done, Robert Allen or somebody like that. But it's called Get It Done.
David Allen.
And it really, it totally helped me because I had a big insight when he said, you know, a task is anything that you can do under 2 minutes. Mm. Anything over that is a project. And I'm like, oh, no wonder I'm frustrated. I am trying to achieve projects in 2 minutes. And so I needed to chunk it down and break it down. So that's made a big difference to me, is keeping a to-day list and making it so small, like it makes breathing look easy.
I mean, it is that thing, isn't it, about we put these massive things on our to-do list and then wonder why we procrastinate on them. Because what we've really put on there is a project, not an actual task.
You know, the project could, you know, if you look at it, a project could actually take you 6 months or two weeks or something. And that's not going to happen in a day, is it?
Exactly. So good. So you're a list person like me. Is it a paper list or a online list? Or did you tell me and I haven't remembered?
No, it's both. It's both. And I am trying to rid myself a little bit of paper. Because my mum, you know, as you pull things up, my mum used to write everything on scraps of paper. And so I started to just see how I had become my mother at some point.
It's all off just, doing things, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah, scraps of paper everywhere, you know, with writing that you couldn't read in about 5 minutes, you know. So I tend to use, I think I'm a simple girl at heart here. I've tried the Asanas, I've tried the stuff, and I'm not really, I tend to have a piece of paper, but I love my iPhone. And I love the notes section on my iPhone, because I know that I can forward it to my email. And if there's something particularly important and I know that I've got to go clear it, I can just email myself, because I need to keep it front of mind. But if I just have it in one or two places, you know, like I haven't got my pad and paper next to my bed, so I might just jot it down in my phone and then just email it to myself. But it's like just one or two places where I go to now, because I tried all of the productivity tools and I just didn't use them.
No, it makes a difference, doesn't it? I use Todoist for my main to-do list, but I have product-based stuff on Asana, and it's funny that it's not 100% for me. And I trawled around a few other tools a couple of weeks ago thinking it's not working, you know, great, I need something else, and I haven't found anything better, so I've gone back to it. But maybe I need to invent one.
Maybe a software inventor. But there's so much, isn't it? And there's this idea, is like, if you have another bit of software, it's going to make your life easier. And I just think that the only thing that made anybody's life easy was a dishwasher and a washing machine, and that's it, really. And the microwave, that's it.
See, another soundbite there for us.
That's my take on it.
So shall I ask you if there are any tools and apps you use, or are you telling me it's just your phone and that's it?
I use Asana. I love my Gmail. I love Google Drive. Yeah. I use Dropbox, the things that I can share with people. And I'll tell you what I do love, actually, in terms of software, because I'm on a sort of beta test for my singing academy, is Teachable. I love Teachable. I've got a VA that I use to upload everything. But just to kind of help keep that easier. But it's kind of just picking. I went through this horrible phase where I didn't know what software to pick. So it was almost like I'd either go and sign up for it soon and end up wasting the money and didn't use it. And I think that's really common. Or I would just get myself into just almost like too many sweeties on the smorgasbord, and then you just didn't know. You're trying to always find the right one or the best one. And I just thought, oh, you know, out of the window with all of that. What do we actually, you know, I think Nicola Carecross, our mutual friend, had said this to me. She said, Angela, you simply need just in time, not just in case. And I just thought, oh, that's it. And it took that overwhelm of trying to choose the right thing all the time. It was like, well, what works right now? What's needed right now? And if you need something new, then, you know, it'll be there. You can find it.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting as well. One of my podcast guests right from the beginning, so a couple of years ago, was Roy Carter over in Australia, and he recommended Value Add-on as a membership site software. And I started using it, and I really liked it, and it was quite simple. And then I was getting a bit frustrated with it, because it was feeling a bit old-fashioned to me. And then Teachable appeared, and I really liked the interface. I just thought it looked really nice and modern. And I actually swapped over to it, and it really didn't take me very long. I didn't have loads of stuff on it, on Value Add-on, but just the fact that it was already formatted into a course meant that actually copying and pasting from one to the other with two screens actually wasn't a big deal. So, you know, as Nicola says, definitely just in time, but also just that thing about you can always change stuff. You know, you don't have to be wedded to something for the rest of your life sort of thing, apart from maybe your husband. Yeah. Your wife or whatever. Okay. I think that's where that's okay. came from.
But that's your soundbite.
But you know, exactly, you know, you just, as it's sort of just in time, it's also, you know, it'll do for now, and then, you know, develop as you go along is you know, a good way of looking at it as well. Otherwise you get too, you procrastinate over not being able to decide because you think it's such an important decision, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's funny, like we're talking about the soundbite thing, but when I think back to the soundbites that are actually true that people have, you know, used, like, you know, just in time instead of just in case, and version one is better than version none, I sometimes have to remind myself that that is true, just to kick myself, you know, the homeless guy, Bob, who lives in my head telling me that I need to organise all of this before I step out.
Yeah, I love that. Homeless guy, Bob, in your head. I like that. You need to find him a home somewhere else, obviously.
Honestly, I have to give him one of those, like, my daughter and I are reading at the moment, Enid Blyton, The Faraway Tree, and they have this ginormous, they have this this ever-expanding toffee, and you put it in your mouth and it expands. And so occasionally, in order to shut Bob up, I have to imagine I'm giving him an ever-expanding toffee, and then he just quietens down for a while in my head and then get on with it.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love it. So what about helping you to get stuff done? You've already talked about having an assistant. That's happening. Generally, life and work, how do you get stuff done with the aid of other people?
I wrote down three things as to what it is. First of all, I used to abdicate these things out of my business, and what I mean is I started off with a VA many, many years ago before I really needed one, and people might think that's a good thing, but it actually wasn't, because I didn't have an overview or an understanding of what I really needed in that time in my business. So it was a case of abdicating and handing it over to somebody because I either didn't want to face it, didn't know what to do with it, or thought that I was showing up as a big business person if I had a VA. And it became a complete nightmare because you're paying out a lot of money. So, you know, and you're either got lack of communication going on, or they're not able to do what you want them to do because they either don't have the skills, or that you didn't know to ask them. So it became important second time round when I had a VA to decide exactly what I was delegating out. And for me, I delegated everything to do with the new beta testing for the singing academy, because long term, I wanted the people in there to be able to go to her for tech issues and not email me or message me. So, you know, but it, other things, you know, emailing, all my, I do all my own social media, because I feel as if I can respond better to that. So it's a learning curve for me in terms of learning what to delegate out, and to have an overview and an understanding, first of all, of what the thing is, so I can measure the results of whether they're actually working or not. Because at the start of it, I had no clue about that. And I just kind of, you know, wasted money or wasted time or frustrated myself and the other person in the doing. So certainly it's having a VA is important, but not always at right at the start of things. No. My husband, he is definitely has been brilliant because seeing as when he was recuperating, etc., and now he's taken over some of the house stuff, but it's become almost quite fun. And I actually had to let him do stuff without criticizing how it was being done. And that was a big one, you know, just like they miss things, love them, they do, you know, they just, but he would put, you know, all of my bras turned grey, all of my pants turned grey, you know, this is the reality of having help. And, you know, but now, you know, we're learning, it's going fine, I can go out and buy some new.
It's
new.
The frozen version of being married, isn't it? The let it go.
Let it go, yeah, absolutely. But it's just like, and even my daughter was like going, look, I had these lovely yellow pants and they've all turned grey. I'm like going, well, yeah, right.
Well,
so, welcome to real life. So yeah, don't come to our laundry drawer. It's really bad news. But my third one was green, what I call green buddies. And my green buddies can be anything from some Facebook groups that where there's a couple of people or a couple of places that I go that I can get a good vibe back from, or some accountability. I've always invested really heavily in my own learning and training and development right from the start, because as a musician, as a singer, you can't teach yourself. So yeah. I still have a vocal mentor at the age of 48, but they have moved from when they were when I was 18. They are, you know, advanced researchers in science and voice. But I always have another pair of ears, and I've always had business mentors. Some have been the right ones at the right time, and others have not been the right ones at the right time. Mm. Some of those mentors have been in groups with people, and some of it has been, you know, a course even. And again, you make your mistakes as you go along, and because you don't always know what you need at the right time. But sometimes even that shows you what you need. It's just that I just decided that whether I'd pick the right thing or the wrong thing, I would never see it as a waste of time, money or effort. Mm. Because it was always showing me something that I couldn't see in the moment. So I just think that you have to surround yourself with people that can challenge you and support you at the same time. And that's what helps me to keep my foot in the door and keep it going on.
Mm. It's an interesting point you made at the beginning about investing in people and not using them properly and sort of wasting money. I was talking to somebody the other day about how, in fact, I was running a workshop for some business leaders around empowerment. And I was saying about how quite often we don't empower people because we haven't got to the stage ourselves where we've systemized enough that we can actually delegate effectively, which means that it's all well and good giving people responsibility. But if we don't actually show them, explain and enable them to do whatever it is we need them to do in the right way, then they can't do that, and that's what gets in the way. So I was saying, you know, I have a VA and she does a certain amount of jobs for me religiously every week perfectly, but there are other things I could give her and I just haven't yet, because it involves me having to up my game to get that in a situation where I can hand it over, and I haven't had chance to do that myself. So there's a process to it, isn't there? It's not just get somebody and off you go.
No, it's true. And I think you'd said about upping your game. And sometimes, again, for me, there was two areas, particularly for tech for me. I just did not consider myself as a technical person. And the problem with that is that when you're then wanting to use tech, or you need to use tech, or that's, computers are part of our lives, etc. I wanted to just abdicate it because I didn't want to have to face it. And I had a belief about myself that I couldn't do tech. It wasn't my skill set. And actually it's been proved untrue all the time. It what proved true to me was I actually hired somebody at a lower cost, actually, to walk me through how to decommission my current website, as it were, so that I can see what the process of actually putting one together is. And when I do delegate that, I know exactly what I need to be asking for, whereas if I'd have just tried to sort of outsource that straight away, which I would have done in the past, we could be weeks going around in circles trying to get the right result for it. Mm. So for me, it's about sort of looking square in the face of the things that I think I need to delegate but or don't want to do, because this idea that, delegate everything you don't want to do. Well, that's fine, actually. Yes, I've hired a cleaner. I can clean the toilet, she cleans the toilet. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if I delegate everything I don't want to do, there's something I'm missing, and it will come and trip me up at the next level, because if I really don't understand finances or, the basis behind the strategy, what I'm using for social media or whatever, it's going to trip me up somewhere. The results are going to come out. The apple does not fall far from the tree, does it?
I think that's a really good explanation of that whole glib phrase that managers use about, I wouldn't ask anyone to do something I couldn't do myself. And it's easy to say that, but actually I think you've just defined why you need that ability, even if you aren't going to be doing it ever. at least you need the knowledge, even if you can't do it, if you see what I mean. It's interesting. Lovely. So thinking about yourself then, and how you keep yourself well and with the energy to deal with all this stuff. I'm still reeling about all the things you do, plus the traveling around the country, plus all the child support stuff around the dancing.
It is mental. And the truth of the matter is I was absolutely terrible. And not only was I terrible at it, I actually used busyness as a badge of honor for like this martyrdom, this female martyrdom, because there was an element of the kind of maybe the female movement that I hadn't identified with at all, which was because you're worth it, and the L'Oreal and the pampering. And I had to laugh because I went to a sort of 3-day business retreat once, and it was held at Champneys. And I went in there thinking, oh, great. And when I saw everybody just walking around in bathrobes, I had such a disassociation to the whole thing. I just was nearly walked out the door. I couldn't cope with everybody just having lunch in a bathrobe.
It's worse when you go in one of those hotels where they have a spa and it's a business hotel as well. I was in one yesterday, and all these people kept walking by in dressing gowns, and I can't be doing with that either.
I was like, what is this about? Because to me, and again, I mean, I was laughing about it, but there was a truth to it. To me, self-care felt indulgent, and that wasn't a good thing. I wasn't seeing it correctly. Because I was, you know, because our family was faced with my husband having cancer. I had a 5-year-old at the time. I had a stepson who was 18 at the time that we were going through it. And I also had an elderly mother 140 miles away who was also having hospital admissions at the same time. It felt so chaotic. It was again like this sort of delegating and abdicating thing, because I didn't understand what that self-care really needed to look like for me, or I wasn't honoring and valuing the energy that I needed to do it. I had gone into this sort of I have no needs mode. I'm just there, I'll take it. And there was a kind of sense of martyrdom about it, you know. Here I was muscling through, and doing all this stuff, and what really hit me was when my mum passed away last March, literally my body just virtually collapsed on me, because emotionally I it was almost the end of such a long journey. And I kind of just realized that, again, like this up leveling, there was things that I felt I still had and wanted to do in my life. There was a daughter that was growing up. There was things to do and things that I wanted to do. And I just realized that if I didn't turn my attention to this and find the right pathway for me as to self-care, nothing was actually going to be, even if I had it all, even if I'd achieved everything that I thought I wanted to, if I felt ill or tired or stressed, it wasn't going to be a value, you know. There was no value in it. It's no going on holiday and then you get there and you're so exhausted you can't enjoy the scenery. So for me now, it was about looking at these little things, what was going to start to make the difference. And I kind of had to get a little bit quiet, because there's so much out there. You could kind of go crazy, couldn't you? There's so much out there, sort of almost like a brass band of noise of things that you can do towards self-care.
Yeah.
Everything from retreats to diets to goodness knows whatever else. And for me, I think energy is the big one, because when I was first teaching, as I said, it was like you think you have to fix everything, you know, and there was a level of boundaries about what you're responsible for and what you're not responsible for. And suddenly when you do get the opportunity to step back, because responsibility for me, the main breadwinner in the family. And so I kind of took it so seriously that I almost put myself on a shelf completely, and which you know, was the craziest thing to do, but it was all where my thinking was at the time. So you know, I started doing things like just enjoying the time with my daughter. When she does ballroom dancing, I use it as a time of relaxation, and I use it as a time to just enter into some fun of it all. She's trying to teach me the samba at the moment. It's not going well. but also I think I recently I started to look at fasting, and an odd way of doing it was somebody had mentioned about intermittent fasting, and I could just feel it like sparked a little bit of something in me, curiosity. And I look now for those sparks of curiosity as a kind of a light in the pathway ahead for me personally.
Yeah.
And I'd found that sort of doing like a 5-2 diet or an intermittent fast was really helpful for me. Just to, it was breaking the comfort eating, because I'd found things like when, you know, I wasn't a drinker, I didn't smoke, but I had just as many addictions to things like staying at the computer till midnight, overworking, you know, going for biscuits and food as an antidote to other things that I was dealing with. So it was looking at that. It was looking at how those things were playing out for me in light of, you know, you can't go, you just can't, even a tree, isn't it? It's like, I just think of nature a lot. It's like, we've got a massive tree outside the house, and I just look at it going through the seasons, and I'm like, it really can't grow and do anything more unless it's going to let something else go and have some rest time in between. And then sort of it gets to grow and bud again. And who was I to try and operate outside the laws of nature, really?
Yeah.
So a very personal journey for me on self-care. And I'm really feeling as if I don't have any expertise on self-care at all. I'm just looking at how it's played out for me, and just looking at what's relevant now to, you know, my age in life and sort of being menopausal and how that's changed everything. And and just almost making me part of it, whereas before it was about trying to separate me out of it, which was really the most unhealthy way of doing it.
Interesting. I think often when we talk about sort of self-care stuff, we sort of pile into, you know, I walk every day and I eat this and I whatever that. I think, again, going back to what I was saying about being in the moment, I think just being sort of more aware of what we can do that is, you know, good, and what we can, or positive, and or what we can do that's the opposite, is half the battle, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just like shutting down the computer. Like, it, you know, I work, you know, we're at the moment building an office in the garden, because I could just recognise that there's just too much temptation for me to just go back to old work habits of just losing myself in work rather than, you know, taking the time out. Or, I think journaling has been a big help to me in just sort of identifying where those little changes can be made that start to make a bigger difference. And it doesn't have to be like, I avoided a lot of that just because I thought I had to make massive changes, and I'd always put it off because I just thought I don't have time to make massive changes, although I wanted the results of the massive change. Yeah. So it was a case of just looking at it and just bringing it back to, you know, what's the smallest thing here that's going to make the biggest difference to today. And it could be just like, you know, I'm going to shut the computer off, and I'm going to go and just sit and watch a program with my husband. And that just, it was things like, it just identified where, for instance, I was just adrenaline fueled, or I was just not present. And, you know, believe you me, like your family and your life, it will kind of knock at the door and go, oh, no, you're not listening. And people often find that they've either hit burnout, or there's a book comes out by somebody because now they've seen the light and they've hit burnout, and then they come out of the shadow and they hit burnout. But I think if we just monitor that, if it make it day tight, like little compartments of the day, you can start to sort of wax and roll. So I don't think there's any kind of balance, really. It's like you're always rebalancing, aren't you?
So you sound like you're sort of adjusting and learning on a regular basis. You already talked about your vocal coach, you know, who helps you. Have you got any other recommended sort of resources, books, podcasts, anything that has helped you in this area?
Yeah, hugely. I tell you what has really helped in terms of mindset and looking into that area. There's a brilliant podcast by a lady called Nicola Bird, and it's called A Little Peace of Mind.
Yeah.
And I totally recommend it for people. There's lots of different topics, but it's particularly on the topics of anxiety and, you know, how human beings experience their world. Particularly, I just read the books by Michael Neal, Inside Out Revolution, Space Within, and Creating the Impossible. And I mean, I am a huge bookworm, and so is my daughter. And actually, I tell you what we do as well is sometimes you find learning in the craziest of places. I love Audible, so I tend to sort of stick something on in the car. And I used to only kind of, you know, try and do serious business book learnings years ago. And now I put on things like Harry Potter, and we put, you know, stories on, and we drive up to Blackpool listening to Harry Potter or something. And then you hear a snippet of nugget, and you know, it's like everything can be a teacher. I think my favourite quote at the moment is an Einstein quote, and it says, you either look at every day as if it's a miracle, or you look at no day. You're like, either everything's a miracle or nothing's a miracle.
Right.
So there's certainly for people, I would recommend anything by Michael Neal or the podcasts of Nicola Bird, because I think, you know, or just sometimes just doing, grabbing something that you would never think had, that you would go towards, something completely opposite, and then looking at it with a bit of a fresh insight and seeing what comes out of it, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely lovely. And yeah, I've known Nicola a long time. I was on her mailing list many, many years ago, and if you've ever heard my famous Joe Dodd story, it was Nicola who actually prompted that story, which I won't bore you with now because we're running out of time. But just the fact that she kept all that anxiety. I mean, she was always, you know, 3 million miles an hour of everything, at everything she did. And, you know, I would have said she was possibly high maintenance or some other, you know, description like that. But she kept that anxiety stuff that she's been really honest about since so well hidden. Yeah. You know, the fact that she wouldn't travel and things like that, you know, the amount of stuff she did while she clearly was really struggling but didn't tell people.
You would have never known. No. And I think that's what's, to me, that's so beautiful. It's like I do it with my singing students and all sorts. It's sharing the journey, because if we just, we think sometimes that we've just got to show up in life and in business as if we've got, you know, our tie straight and our P's and Q's in place, and that people only want to see us if we're a success. And that is absolutely untrue. In all of my years of being a vocal coach, the biggest breakthroughs that have happened for my clients and myself have been through authenticity and vulnerability and honesty. And I think that's what, you know, it seems to be the new buzzword at the moment, but I don't think it ever really went away.
No. Okay, so last couple of questions in limited time. What about if things don't go right? How do you deal with that?
Oh, if things don't go right, I thought about that. I thought, what do I do now? I stepped back, I had to think of it in terms of music here. When something isn't going right in music, the easiest temptation is to go at it harder. And but when I step back from it, it's like I had a phrase in singing whenever I couldn't do something, which was, there's something I'm not seeing here. Right. And as soon as I would say that phrase to myself, I'd be stepping out the ring of fire, take the emotion out of it. And I would just, either I'd go away and have a cup of tea, or I'd just, you know, I'd have to come back and I'd either have to try it differently. But it was about sort of zooming back out in order to see something clearer and zooming back in. If it's not going right, there's such a tendency to either go at it harder or play the blame game. And really, truthfully, there's just something we're not seeing in the moment.
I love that. And it sort of goes back to your sort of less is more sort of mantra throughout. Yeah, okay, lovely. And what about a day when you end the day knowing that you've had the chance to live more? And that's where I talk about, that's getting to do more of the things that you really want to do and not the stuff that you feel you should do or you have to do. What does that day look like?
Gosh, I realise that I have lived more when I realise that a client and I have just connected at a deeper level, when we've just connected to the energy behind life more, when we've, you know, when I've stopped for a moment and I just take a microcosm of a second to look at the daffodils that are just sitting in my dining room right now with the light on them, or that, you know, I've that excitement with a new client, you know, and that sense of possibility, or I've cleared my desk, or even if I look at my messy kitchen and realize that the messy kitchen simply proves that we're still alive and kicking. Mm-hmm. It's for me a successful day. It used to totally joke. It used to be so much about achievement. It used to be so much about out there in order to prove that I was. And when I realized that that was so much of an illusion, that you're all, you know, that it wasn't about doing less in order to say that wasn't what you wanted. It was about maybe having it more concentrated, like a nice piece of dark chocolate instead of just, a cheap
holy
piece
strength.
Of yeah, chocolate. Yeah, you know, it was about sort of maybe squeezing the juice more about what was important in the moment. And I've done more of what was great since I've started to go down that track than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Thank you so much, Angela. I just said Angela and then thought her name's not Angela, but it is Angela. So now I'm panicking. It's because we were talking about Andrea at the beginning and it's confused me. Yes, thank you, Angela. It's been one of those podcasts that has been really quite deep and to use a cliche, deep and meaningful. I mean, it's just been a really different look at some of these questions, which I think has been really, really enjoyable. Thank you very much. Tell people how they can find out more about you and how they can connect with you.
Yeah. At the moment, while my website is all broken down, there is a contact form on there, so they can just go to www.angeladurant.com with a double R, or they can email me at angela@angeladurant.com. I'd love to hear from people.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you a home-based coach or consultant feeling like you need a bit of help? Our Power to Live More Calm membership is designed to meet you where you're at with the help you need in the moment so you can get unstuck, move forwards and get stuff done. You might think this sounds too good to be true, or maybe wondering how it would fit with how you work and run your business. Why not have a no obligation chat with Jo to see how she can help you? All you need to do is go to powertolivemore.com/calmcall.
Use your power to live more.